once again, I find myself in the comfortable position of being between two parties with significantly different views. And unlike most of our work, I don't actually have to make a decision at the end of today. As Matt said, the National Competition Council is a small, very small federal agency. We're made up of four councillors, all of whom are appointed from the private sector and only work with us part-time, and a small staff secretariat I lead. As Matt said, the principal issues we deal with these days are third-party access and making recommendations as to what should be declared and therefore opened up to the possibilities of negotiation, mandatory negotiation, and if necessary, an arbitration process. Just to correct Alan on one minor matter, we don't determine the price. Once we make our recommendation and assuming the Treasurer accepts it, any arbitration that's required to set prices or other access terms are done by the ACCC, and I'm extremely thankful for that. We also have a range of functions under the National Gas Law, but there's no time or inclination to talk about those. They're broadly similar. I want to speak in relatively general terms, but I will come back to the Pilbara Rail by way of illustration as much as anything else. Let me say at the start, the National Competition Council considers Part 3A of the Trade Practices Act to be sound law, sound policy. And we believe that the criteria in general terms that we apply in making declaration recommendations are appropriate. Now, I say that from an organisation that has a deregulatory pedigree. The principal activity for most of its existence of the National Competition Council has been to push regulatory reform under national competition policy. We have a strong deregulatory pedigree, and we are sceptics about the role of regulation. We also make it clear in agreeing with Julian, declaration is hard to get. You must meet all six criteria. I don't see any basis to suggest that if you had multiple providers of a particular service in the relevant market, there is any prospect of declaration. Indeed, the council has turned back significant or reasonably significant numbers of applications for declaration and certainly seen off a number of approaches simply by saying, well, that doesn't look anything like a natural monopoly. It will be uneconomical to duplicate. Please go away. Most infrastructure access in Australia and elsewhere will result from commercial negotiations. And frankly, that's got to be the best way for access to be organised wherever possible. Where private parties sort out access, this is likely to result in a workable and efficient outcome, or at least I'm prepared to presume that a commercially agreed arrangement is going to be better than anything a regulator could impose. However, the converse is not true, and in some cases access is in the national interest, irrespective of the views of an infrastructure owner, no matter how firmly held, noisily promoted, or expensively protected. Before we can recommend in favour of declaration, we have to be satisfied that all six criteria are met, and then the Minister has to be similarly satisfied. The national access regime was introduced as part of a wide-ranging microeconomic reform program following the Hilmer report. In that report, the Hilmer Committee found that the other provisions of the Trade Practices Act, which until then had been relied upon, were insufficient to ensure appropriate access to infrastructure, and that in a limited range of situations, additional guarantees to infrastructure access were required. The genesis of Part 3A lies strictly in the Hilmer Committee's report. There are some wording differences that people write long articles about, but practically the difference between the American test, the Australian test and Hilmer, I don't think we would come to a different view on any decision we've made on something as narrow as that. And if you talk about the rights of companies, it's interesting that the United States Supreme Court some years ago rejected the claim that a defendant in a case has a right as a private business to select its customers and refuse to deal with whoever it pleases. As the court explained its critical reasoning, we do not dispute the general right, but the word right is one of the most deceptive of pitfalls. Most rights are qualified. There are no absolute rights to restrict or refuse to deal. They are all limited in some way, either by the general competition law or in the case of significant infrastructure, by the possible application of Part 3A. Under Part 3A, there is the general right for companies is maintained, but as the court notes, like most rights, it is qualified by the prospect of declaration in a very limited set of circumstances, and then by the prospect of ACCC arbitration of disputes, but only within a set of safeguard rules. To date, there have been 30 applications made in respect of 39 services under Part 3A. Some applications cover multiple services. 14 have been withdrawn, many because the writing was on the wall for the recommendation. 5 were declined, and only 7 have been successful, leading to declaration of only 12 services. Of those, 4 have now lapsed. As at the 30th of June, 8 services were subject to declaration. 6 were for sewage treatment services in Sydney and sewer connection services in the same area. 1 related to airside services in Sydney Airport, and 1 was for services provided by the Tasmanian Railway Network. As at the same time, 4 decisions, all relating to Pilbara Railways, were on review at the Competition Tribunal. In the same period from 1995 to 2009, only 2 access disputes have ever been notified to the ACCC. And the ACCC was, and both of those were in 2007. The ACCC was required to make an arbitration determination in respect of only one of these. The other was settled by the parties before the arbitration was concluded. This hardly amounts to rampant intervention by regulators. The slide on the screen indicates some of the services which are likely to be considered under the national access regime. Note in particular that only some of these will actually meet the criteria, and in many cases, access to services that might otherwise be declared will be sorted out on a commercial basis. Some other possibilities beyond those that have already been dealt with in the past relate to some port facilities and possibly some settlement services. For those of you who follow the American cases, I can assure you that the chances of the MCG or Subiaco Oval being declared under Part 3A are virtually nil. It's also vital that you understand what the consequences of declaration are. In this regard, there has been much misinformation. There is no power to require disintegration or deintegration of anyone's business. There is no power to force ownership change. There is no power to reduce control that an operator has of its facility. You cannot shunt off BHP or Rio's trains to require room to be made for Fortescue's or anyone else's. It's also important to notice that when a service is declared, although in the Pilbara Rail cases Fortescue or its subsidiaries are the applicant, the service is open to all parties, not simply the applicant. So you can have a range of potential users rather than simply the company that gets the pleasure of bearing the costs of the application. I will turn briefly to the Pilbara Rail matters, but my comments are based on the conclusions reached by the Council in its recommendations. Of course, these matters are all subject to rehearing by the Competition Tribunal. In our findings, without access, Pilbara iron ore resources are largely captive to BHP or Rio Tinto, except in extreme boom times or where in fortuitous locations. Fortescue, it is true, built a new railway, but in our view, that was an inefficient investment from the country's point of view. Nonetheless, with the benefit of history, an entirely wise one if they are expecting to get access quickly under Part 3A. Basic economics is such that heavy haul railways are uneconomical to duplicate. If every mine was forced to develop a dedicated railway, many hundreds of millions of dollars of unnecessary expenditure would be involved. In our view, I agree with Julian, it's simply nonsense to suggest there's no capacity. All the existing railways have been expanded on many occasions to meet the needs of owners, or indeed companies that the owners have acquired, without apparent difficulties. The debate here has been intertwined with much spreading of what in the IT sector is called FUD, fear, uncertainty and doubt. Comparisons are drawn with the East Coast coal chains and suggestions of billions of dollars of lost exports. The Council has considered all these claims, now on four occasions, but has found them either to be unjustified or in some cases are relevant matters that might be considered in respect of arbitration of a particular access dispute, but are largely irrelevant when considering declaration. I have absolutely no doubt that if the Council had accepted the dire consequences of access put to it by various service providers, it could have and would have recommended against declaration, and in all likelihood that recommendation would have been accepted. In our view, there are important safeguards in the ACCC processes that it must apply in conducting arbitrations, and these safeguards largely protect the interests of infrastructure owners and prevent some of the dire outcomes that have been claimed. Unfortunately, these criteria have largely been ignored or conveniently dismissed in submissions to the Council by a number of parties. But in the Council's view, these are critical elements in ensuring a proper balance between the interests of owners, access seekers, and most importantly from our point of view, in ensuring an outcome that is in Australia's national interest. All is not, however, well. The time it takes to deal with applications for declaration, and in particular the Pilbara Rail applications, is clearly unacceptable and unworkable. Excessive delay is contrary to almost all interests and to the overall interests of the public and the Australian economy the Council is principally concerned with. It is simply unacceptable to have indeterminate delays in these processes. The NCC can't walk away from some responsibility for this. Certainly our early consideration of the first Pilbara matter took too long. By way of mitigation, I do note that that process, we faced a federal court challenge, a full court challenge, a high court challenge, and then, in addition, a challenge to the tribunal's power to even consider the review application. One of our principal concerns at this point in time is that if the advice given in respect of Part 3A is that if you're prepared to spend $1 million or $2 million a month, you can delay this process as long as possible through legal processes, legal challenges, obfuscation and delay. That would be an unacceptable outcome. I must admit, given that, we are slightly dumbfounded as to why, in the most recent matters, the applicant has persistently missed tribunal deadlines, itself argued for delay and month-long hearings, and supported the service providers when the Council sought to determine a timing arrangement that broadly reflected the requirements of the Trade Practices Act. Nonetheless, we are on track for a hearing at the end of this year, some 3.5, 4 years plus since the original application. There's also been legislative change proposed, and some already undertaken, with a view to trying to fix this process. The Assistant Treasurer, as he was, Chris Bowen, recently announced a number of steps that he intended to take to assist both the Council and the Tribunal in redressing the delay in process. Binding time limits will be imposed on us, on ministers, and to a degree on the tribunal. There will be a limit to the scope of merits review. Although the changes to that process didn't go as far as the Council might have wished, it will certainly be a step forward. There will also be a provision deeming that where a minister doesn't make a decision, although I'd rather that wasn't a standard practice, the Council's recommendation will be accepted rather than in all cases a deemed no. In addition, there will be a removal of the automatic stay when the tribunal application is lodged. And finally, there will be a provision for the tribunal to make costs awards against parties unsuccessful and those that delay the process. Now, in the end, the tribunal is never going to impose a cost award that's large enough for BHP Rio and to a degree Fortescue to care about. We will. But nonetheless, that is a clear signal to parties as to what they should get on with. Those changes, we think, should be welcomed by every party that's concerned with uncertainty and risk posed by commercially unrealistic delays in dealing with access issues. And frankly, if they're not enough, then there will need to be further steps, because the alternatives to an effective Part 3A are either unnecessary and expensive duplication of facilities or the persistence of monopoly, neither of which, in my view, are worse than an effective regulatory regime with very limited application. Thank you very much for your time.